And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Here we go, the finger. We are live.
No, we're not live. We're live, but yes. We're live on tape.
I know.
And we do, by the way, we do this in real time.
Malcolm, don't be a pain in the ass, will you?
I'm not a proctologist.
Okay, you're not? Okay. Anyway, aside from our kidding around, which we try to do, anyway, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. We are broadcasting from the Mark Grau studio, and with me on my left is our famous producer, co-host, cohort, and whatever else you want to call him, Malcolm Berman.
Famous or infamous?
It's famous. Famous. You're famous.
What does infamous mean?
Bad.
Bad.
Bad. Well, maybe. Well, you are bad, so maybe you're famous and infamous at the same time.
But if bad means good in slang vernacular, does infamous mean bad meaning good?
No, I don't think so. Anyway, what the hell's the difference?
If anybody knows it,
Malcolm,
please
you're here.
Us.
What's the difference?
I'm here, but I'm going to be here.
Let's not quibble about words.
I always quibble. I'm Jewish.
You're a quibbler. Anyway, for all you people out there, again, we are here and we're doing today's broadcast. And there are a couple of things that we will bring to your attention, whether you like it or not. But I will start off with a TV show. Well, not necessarily a show. It was an interview last night on CNN. And the interview was covered by that famous reporter, the one whose mother is Gloria Vanderbilt, the multi-zillionaire heiress or whatever you want to call her. And his name is Anderson Cooper.
So, as a matter of fact, he has an hour documentary with him and his mother.
Yes,
which aired,
you.
I think, a few weeks ago.
So if any you people out there want to find out about Anderson Cooper, there's a lot of stuff on him that you could pick up on the internet.
Well, it's more about Gloria, who is 93 years old. It's amazing.
Yeah. And she doesn't look 93. No. Doesn't, not at all.
I want to go to her plastic surgeon. But she's also, of course, has the, you know, her mind is there.
She has the money to pay for the plastic surgeon, whatever. Anyway, he was doing an interview of the Trump family, not specifically Donald Trump about what he will do or what he says he's going to do, but about the family members. And I have to say that I was impressed with the family members. They are all articulate, intelligent, speak well, do well, work in the business. They don't mess around with alcohol or drugs, at least not that we know of. And they really seem to have it all together. And especially when you stop to think about that, there are so many wealthy families out there that have kids that are all totally screwed up. Okay. And at different levels, some a little bit and some a lot. But his kids seem to be, wow, really? They really have it together.
Well, I didn't see the show. The only one that I'm aware of is his daughter, who is quite an articulate kid. I heard parts of her interview saying that, that there's a misconception that Trump is anti-female, because she said during what she knows of his business is he has always hired a lot of strong women for strong positions, and he always told her that she could be whatever she wants, that being female did not.
Yes. I think all four of his kids are very articulate. They all spoke, and I'm telling you, you would be impressed to see all of these kids functioning the way they do.
Well, the trouble is, I find with the Trump campaign, I don't know if he believes half the things that he says, because I've been aware of Trump, for many years over, being a New Yorker. And in fact, at one time I stayed in one of his condos in Trump Towers. But it seems like what he says doesn't make sense, and he's winging it. And I think he's almost like playing the role he thinks he should be.
You have to remember that he has two basic enemies working against him. One of them is himself, because he is his own worst enemy. He doesn't know when to shut up. Someone has to tell him, shut up. Don't say any more. But how do you do that with a multi-billionaire who's been successful and who has had a lot of fun saying to people, you're fired, get out.
Well, the problem is no one has, but his lack of knowledge about, or at least what he expounds, sometimes it's totally ridiculous.
But not as bad as Sarah Palin.
Well, Sarah Palin, I don't know if you've ever watched Bill Maher or Noah Treva.
Occasionally.
And they really make mincemeat out of Sarah.
Well, she deserves it. They should, and she deserves it. And I am surprised at Trump letting her speak for him. That, in my opinion, was a mistake. I'm not a politician, but I think that was a mistake. And the other big enemy that he has is the established establishment. They all seem to be against him. The Republicans and the Democrats. You knew that the Democrats would be against him, but not all of the Republicans, those that are entrenched, in the Beltway.
Yeah, well, I think he is correct. Well, what I estimate is that neither of the candidates are going to get the required votes. I think it's 1237 or something.
Something like that.
To be nominated on the first go around. Then after the first go around, most of the delegates can vote the way they want to.
Yeah, now isn't that kind of like a parody? I mean, why, if the delegates don't have to vote the way their constituents vote, that means the delegate could do whatever he or she damn pleases.
The second time around, right.
Okay. Now, I think that if he doesn't come in with that minimum number of votes, I don't think he'll get it because they're going to jerk him around.
No. And neither are going to get it. And there's going to be a third candidate, as a matter of fact, with Paul Ryan, who they have suggested. But he said he doesn't think anyone who hasn't run for office should be nominated. So that means there's another there are another 15 people that ran, including Bush.
Let's face it and look at it realistically. None of those Republicans, none of them, could beat Hillary Clinton except maybe Donald Trump. The other guys don't have a chance. She will wipe them out.
Well, that's a question. The question is how many people distrust Hillary? I think as far as running the government, being the best person for the position and knowing the most, hands down, she has the experience. She has the knowledge. She's articulate. Now, as far as people trusting her, this is a big issue.
Yeah, that's a whole big thing. But it's not even the trust. It's a lot of questions relative to her background and a lot of alleged falsehoods that she is told.
Well, that's
and a lot of alleged cover-ups that she is supposedly have done. We don't know. Maybe one day we'll know because somebody will really start and do an in-depth biography or whatever and have access to all of the files that most people can only dream about now, today, because most of this stuff is off limits.
Well, that's a trust factor. I mean, they don't trust her that she told the truth about her emails.
Hey, I have to tell you something. I was reading on the internet, I think it was just yesterday, about 28 pages that were left out of the report regarding 9/11. Because they were too sensitive and would reflect and disturb the relationships between this country and Saudi Arabia. And it was mentioned on one of the major news stations, not Fox or CNN or one of these offbeat conservative places.
Fox is a major one.
Well, I mean major.
So CNN.
I think it was ABC or CBS. That's major. The others are less major. And then you have those that you never even heard of, the different conservative outlets, whether they be radio station, newspaper, or what. So a lot of those you will have trouble in believing.
But in today's internet or the or the media search or the news, how the hell do you know what sources, unless what sources these reports come from? A lot of people say, oh, I know it as a fact. I read it on the internet. But most of the time, it's not really that old-fashioned reporting. Even on CBS and NBC, it's no longer like, you know, I trust, I remember during the Vietnam War, the people that, the person that everybody trusted was Walter Cronkite. And
America trusted him, right?
Yeah, they didn't trust the president. They didn't trust anybody. Walter Cronkite they trusted. But there's no news services out here today that people really trust. Everything is almost like opinions. It's not news.
I'm afraid you're right. It's a lot of it, yeah, is opinions. It's not totally correct. It may be fact-checked, but only partially. So, but when you see something on what I would call, let's say, a major news station like CBS, ABC, NBC, you imagine, you think, you hope that it has been thoroughly fact-checked.
Yeah.
And we know from prior experience it isn't always.
Yeah, but again, you read it on the internet.
Yes.
A lot of people.
And a lot of the internet is crap and baloney anyway.
I mean, I could put things on the internet that you know, people are going to read and say, oh my God, did you hear what Malcolm said from.
Yep.
Yeah. And they take it as fact because people don't read nowadays.
They like to look at pictures, and if they could see it on the internet, which is half picture and half word, oh, it's got to be true.
Got to be true.
Baloney. It's not necessarily so. You hope that it is. You think that it is.
Well,
you have to read everything pro and con and make up your own decision based on your gut feeling.
Right. But, well, plus, what I hate is with this, you know, the 24-hour news service where, you know, a story breaks and there's no new news on it, but these people have to be on the air on a 24-hour basis, and they're talking about it, and they repeat the same things.
Yeah, it's
and then they're
repetition.
And then they're guessing.
Absolutely.
No matter how, knowledgeable they are, they're guessing. Well, I think so-and-so happens, and then there's somebody else. Well, no, that wouldn't be the way it is. And they're not waiting for the facts to come out.
I remember the old days. You put on the news, you listened to it, or you watched it, and that was it. You accepted it. That, you know, there were no questions. That was it. You heard it on the news. It has to be true. Now you don't know.
Now I hear it on the internet. It has to be true. I heard it on The View from over here, and I know that Stan and Malcolm would not lie to me.
Never.
I never lie.
No, I think that's one of the advantages.
I'm a college graduate. I got a master's.
You're intelligent.
I won't lie.
That's what I think about The View from over here, in that it is really correct. It gives you the results, the real news, because we sift through. We just don't take one item and
ride with
spew it out. We check the different counter opinions, the different other views, and say, okay, we got this, we got that. So where is the truth? Somewhere in the middle.
Well, that's Malcolm in the middle.
Yes. No, but I have to tell you, years ago I heard this statement. I forgot who gave it. It was on one of the late night TV shows. And he would say that, you know, the guys are always bragging how many girls they, you know, made it with and so forth. And the girls are always saying how virtuous they are and they would never do anything like that. And his response was, well, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And I think it's the same thing with all this crap we get on the internet. Sometimes I see, oh, this looks like an interesting story. Maybe it's something that I should know about or could use. I open it up and I look at it and say, this can't be. This is garbage.
Now, I myself like looking at pictures. I mean, when I read Playboy, I like the pictures, the articles. Yeah.
You never read the jokes? The jokes were funny.
The jokes were funny. But actually, they did have good stories by top writers.
But I never read them.
But now, when I was a teenager, no, that wasn't the reason for getting Playboy. Do you know that Playboy now is not publishing any centerfold? There are no nude pictures in there?
Well, I didn't know. Yeah. I haven't seen that magazine in years.
We know you're getting older.
It's not that. I just didn't want to lay out the money for that prescription. Subscription.
Subscription.
Now it's a prescription put the money down for.
Don't you know the old days in Brooklyn when you just went to the newsstand and looked at the pictures and put the magazine back?
Absolutely. People do it now at the checkout counter at the different supermarkets.
But now all you have to do is go to the internet and you get as much
right.
nudity you or porn or that, anybody.
You can get all that crap
for
now
free.
For free on the internet. But you know what? You have to be careful when you log on to those sites. Like, you don't ever want to log on to a site that displays kiddie porn.
No.
Okay? Because when I was with the sheriff's department, that's what we looked for, the perennial kiddie porn viewer.
Mm-hmm.
And once you found somebody right. like that, well, then you could track him, look back, and find out just about everything about that person. And it's a criminal offense. If you have more than – actually a federal offense, if I recall correctly. If you have, let's say, two or more pieces of kiddie porn. One, okay. But
sure.
if you start collecting that stuff, man, you will be in deep doo-doo.
Yeah. Well, this is what brings up to another topic, what's happening in Mississippi and North Carolina where they have these laws – about, well, I think it's North Carolina where they have Mississippi about where the transgender people can use the bathroom that they most associate themselves with. So if it's a guy who feels like he's a woman, he could use the women's room. Right? And
yeah.
if a woman feels like she's more a man, can use a men's room. But the problem is, which I don't mind them using it, you know, somebody who's truly transgender. But with the weirdos and sick people out there now.
But what do you do with a guy like Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner? He supposedly became a female, but he kept all of his original equipment.
He's psychologically a woman. So he would use the ladies' restrooms. But it's not so much women or adults, but they have this in schools where the boys could go into the girls' room.
Now?
Well, if the law passes, the one in Mississippi, they could do – or no, I think they could do it. I don't know whether that law has passed. But that basically – it's illegal in those states that pass a law against it, the transgender using bathrooms. So,
well, Malcolm, there was a guy on the internet yesterday, and he said that, and they showed his picture, and he said that – I don't care if you're trans, whatever, but if some guy goes into the bathroom where my wife is, he's not going to live to talk about it.
But the wife is in a stall. I mean, men.
You know what? Look,
yeah, I know. It's macho. But the thing is, I don't worry about the people who truly, like the Jenners, who truly identify with the other sex. It's the people who will take advantage of it. Because this was good for schools. Where you know boys could use a girl's room, and I don't know about any teenagers that wouldn't take advantage of that, teenage men, or they could use the locker rooms.
Well, you know what? Times are changing. Everything is changing. In fact, I was reading not too long ago about the projected ride, I guess you call it a ride, a spaceship going to Mars, okay, for people to live and set up a potential colony. Because they have allegedly discovered water on Mars, and the experts feel that there is plenty of water and oxygen under the surface, under the ground.
Now, if they could find the water for Los Angeles, maybe it could solve a problem.
Well, they'll find it there and ship it. Anyway, and they're talking about male and female crews going for up to 3 years or longer.
But would they have to be married?
I didn't hear that they had to be married.
Are they couples?
That they did not have to be couples. They could just be, you know, singles. How can you have that as a requirement? You cut down the probability of getting very qualified people if you insist that they be couples. And even if they're couples, you have them cooped up together in a little room for 3+ years. They ain't going to be couples when they come back.
Well, they wouldn't be cooped up in a room. There's something, I forget, like this big tents. Well, I guess I'm saying too much science fiction.
Yes, but
movies.
Anyway,
yeah.
The whole premise was, well, what do these people do? They're going to be gone that long, facing danger, whatever, you know, life-threatening situations. And that takes you back to like, a couple of 100,000 years ago when people were just living in caves and where male and female shared life-threatening dangers together. There's nothing that will bring a couple together closer than sharing life-threatening dangers.
But they only live to be about 25, 30,
yeah,
maybe.
Okay, yes, but still, at 24 or 30, they could still get it up, right?
I don't know.
You don't know? Oh, you don't remember?
I don't remember that far back.
All right, what else do you want to talk about, Malcolm? Of interest.
Well, what I want to, today is an auspicious day. It's in LA sports.
Yeah, you were starting to talk about sports, and yeah, when we got off sidetracked.
Kobe Bryant is retiring after 20 years. It makes me feel old because I remember when he came into the league with the LA Lakers as a 17-year-old kid, and they were talking. Now, 20 years later, he's retiring. And brings back a lot of memories. But in fact, I was telling you, I know you're...
And you're a basketball player.
I'm a basketball player.
Okay.
In fact, I'm so long, I'm just a shade under 6 foot. When I played basketball, I played power forward. If anybody knows anything, power forwards now are about 6'9" to 6'11".
How tall were you then?
I tell my kids I was 6'4", but actually I was just a shade under 6.
Wait a minute. No. When you get older, you shrink.
I know. I was
You grew.
About
you
six.
Got taller.
No, I tell them I used to be 6'3". They don't believe me.
Okay, and what are you now?
Now I'm about 5'10 and a half.
Really?
But back then I was about 6. I lost about an inch and a half of height.
Okay, that's about average.
Over the years.
Okay. I got to tell a friend of mine I know all my life practically. I saw him in Florida about a month ago, and I said to him, you know what? I know I haven't grown, but you sure must have shrunk because you look a lot shorter than I remember. He said, yeah, he's shrunk 3 inches.
3 inches.
That's a lot.
He spent too much time in the ocean, in the water.
I don't know where he spent his time, whatever.
Speaking about concepts of height, my father was a bantamweight boxer, fighter, professionally. And He passed away, actually it's about 50 years already. But just recently I asked my brother, I said, yeah, it's strange. You know, Daddy was a bantamweight, which is probably like about 112 to 115 pounds. But I said he was about 5'7", 5'8". He really must have been thin. So my brother looks back to me and says, which father are you talking about? And I said, Daddy. And he says, Daddy wasn't over 5'2 or 5'3". But my perception as a kid, then I went back to look at my bar mitzvah pictures. And sure enough, he wasn't taller than me. And I was only about 5'1", 5'2" then. But looking at older from, you know, kids' point of view, these...
perception. Yeah. You know, one time we went back to Brooklyn just for the hell of it to see what it was like. So Marilyn says, take me to a particular street. I said, okay, here we are. We're on it. And she said, no, this is not it. I said, yeah, you see the sign? This is that street.
It was much
bigger. No. I remember it was a lot bigger than this.
Well, try going back to your old elementary school. I have my plates in my car at PS-188. That's the school I went to in Coney Island. And every time I go back there, I go back, take a look at the school. It is so small. I mean, the rooms are so tiny, and you try to sit in the seats.
Sitting in the seats, that I can understand, yeah. Because now you have a big, fat butt. When you were a kid, you had a small, tiny butt.
But anyway, getting back to Kobe. So Kobe's retiring. Today is the last game at Staples. Now, I know you guys, your company has seats.
Yeah, they didn't offer me that seat.
Right. Now, your seats, which are like about press box level. Probably
fairly good seats.
Probably could go between $5,000 to $6,000 each.
Wow. Well,
they have the nosebleed seats up in the third tier. They're going from $800 to $1,000.
Ay.
And the seats at courtside were going for $25,000 a ticket. Can you imagine taking your son to the ball game for $50,000?
No. Well, if you're Donald Trump, you can. You know, it's just, you know, chump change.
Trump change, yeah. But actually, it should be filled with all the celebrities. I mean, you know, Jack is going to be there.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether Spike's going to be there or not. And I don't know whether Michael's going to be there, Michael Jordan, because at the same time, the Golden State Warriors are playing, I think, some Memphis Grizzlies. And they're going for they have won 72 games, which is a record. or actually they tied the record of the 96 Chicago Bulls. Now they're going for their 73rd win, which would give them the all-time lead. So now ESPN
That's impressive.
Yeah, ESPN has switched. The ESPN 1 was supposed to carry the Laker game with Kobe. Now it's on ESPN 2, and ESPN 1 is playing the Golden State game.
Hmm.
But so it should be quite an evening for basketball fans.
Yeah. Now, when they have those games, but I have a very important question.
Oh, okay, I have an important
when
answer.
When they have those key games at the end or beginning of a season, are they ever replayed for people that want to see it, that missed it the first time around?
What do you mean replayed?
Well, let's say you have the final game of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, I know they keep that in the can somewhere.
That would be replayed.
Erase it. They replay those. That's my question.
As a matter of fact, they would probably have a record of every basket that Kobe ever scored. They have, okay. I mean, his big thing, I don't know if you're not a basketball fan, but he's, Will Chamberlain has a record for 100 points a game. Only player that ever did it. But at that time, there was no national television for the game. It was not on TV. It was not covered by a major newspaper. So you have one person reporting it. Today, every shot is recorded.
And cataloged.
And cataloged, because they do that, I mean, with baseball, they could do every home run that was ever hit, and you'll see it as it's played.
In fact, a real baseball fanatic, somebody who really studies the game, male or female, they will be able to recall almost instantly every game, every play, just about everything, going back since they started watching the game. Mm-hmm.
Well, going back to Kobe, when Kobe scored 81 points, they have every shot that he took in that game. So if you want to go back, now they're playing, if you were watching the sports, they have, you know, the top 10 Kobe games. But this, as a matter of fact, I have the game, I'm taping it. I'm going to watch it, but I am taping it. Actually, not so much the game I'm interested in, because Kobe is not Kobe anymore. He's not the player that he used to be.
None of us are.
Oh, I'm the player that I used to be.
Oh, except maybe for you. Yeah, sure.
But, you know, because he complains about everything hurting him, Kobe. And
all I could say is welcome to the club, Kobe.
But anyway, I'd like to see the beginning of the game when they have the tributes to him and they have and the reception that he gets. Because his personality has changed over the year from being like one time he was like an arrogant kid. Of course, when he's 17, 18, right out of high school. Play, then he became the Black Mamba,
could make you very arrogant.
Which he was a killer. He was always competitive. He never smiled. He was, almost like cutthroat. But you accept it because that was him. And the last year when he announced his retirement, he is hugging everybody. He is smiling.
Tell me, how much money do you think he has made in his entire 20-year career?
As a basketball player or as a basketball player who does endorsements?
No, forget the endorsements.
I don't know. I think right now he's making $20 million. I think I had a five-year contract, about $100 million.
So his average is probably about, if he's making 20 now, so his average is probably 10 to 15 mil a year for the 20 years.
Right. Plus endorsements. He has expenses. You know how expensive it is?
Probably has two expensive cars.
Not even the cars.
Expensive house.
You know how much it is for him to take the helicopter from his house to
Staples? Oh, I didn't know that he took a helicopter to work.
How else do you get to work?
You drive like most people. You take public transportation.
Not LA traffic. Well, one thing being about
leave
being,
earlier.
Well, one thing about being a basketball player, it's hard to hide. And I think he's about 6'8".
Yeah,
it's hard to hide. You know, you can't go
into
the crowd.
Do they have a heliport on the roof?
I believe so. They have the heliport someplace.
Well, it's not right around where I can see it, or anyone can see it, because I've been there and I don't see where a helicopter would land, except maybe on the roof.
Well, it could have landed the roof, but some of the buildings have heliports. some of the major buildings. I was doing a show once on, it was the auto show, and we were doing out of, in Westwood. And we were talking about, one of our guests was a sergeant with the Pasadena Police Department, and we were talking about, we wanted to talk about traffic control because it was the time of the Rose Bowl. So he was supposed to be at the studio, I think, like, it's at 7 p.m. So 6:30, we call him up and say, well, when are you going to be here? He said, oh, I'm leaving Pasadena now. And I said, well, with all this traffic, how are you going to get here? He said, simple, we're going to land at – he took his helicopter. And they landed over the Veterans Hospital, which is federal property.
Well, all right, so much for that. Anyway, we've been getting in some nice responses from people, and apparently people like what we've read regarding – the trees. Okay.
Now,
for
I want
the
last to ask you that.
Of weeks.
You were in a total. You weren't a writer. You didn't grow up to be a writer. At what age did you start writing?
Well, actually, I started at a very early age, but I had an English teacher who totally turned me off because he accused me of plagiarism. Did I pronounce it right?
Plagiarizing.
He didn't believe that I wrote what I said I wrote. And I got so turned off, and I felt so bad. I like lost the desire to do that until many years later.
And how old were you then?
Then, well, in high school, how old were
you? High school, so you were early teen.
It must have been,
15,
I'm guessing, 16. Let me see. I'd say about 15, 16, with this particular teacher totally turned me off writing by accusing me of stealing.
And when did you pick it up again?
God, much later. I guess my 50s.
So about, almost like about 40 years later.
Yeah, like a lifetime for some people.
Some people don't live to be that old. But
anyway, right.
Is this your first book? Or?
Well, actually, I've written three, and I'm not sure which is the first because I worked on them kind of simultaneously. Now, I've taken a lot of classes on writing, and one of the things that they tell you, never work on more than one project at the same time. Okay, I didn't go by that direction. I did. If I worked on one, I'd get stuck. I'd go to the other and back and forth. And I was able to do that, I believe, because I worked in consulting for so many years where you work on actually maybe a dozen or more different projects the same day.
So your mind
My mind didn't get me stuck only on one. I must finish it before I touch anything else. No. So it enabled me to do that.
So what is your inspiration for that? I mean, what did you why did you do trees? What was
basically
the motivation?
Basically, it was just a lot of things that I've encountered. Like everything in the book, I mean, everything happened. It's all true, except, of course, not in the sequence in which I lay it out and not with the same people. My main characters are composites of maybe five or six people. I use real people in here a lot of times. If somebody has passed away, I could say whatever I like about them.
Okay. Except their relatives would sue you.
Let them. Give me more publicity.
Or come after you.
Let them. More publicity. That's good for sales. Now, if I'm going to say anything bad about a person and they're still alive, of course, I have to change the name. Because then you'll definitely be sued, or maybe there'll be a court order, cease and desist. You can't sell. You can't do anything. Your hands are tied behind your back.
Names are changed to protect the guilty.
Exactly. Yeah, sure.
Now, if anybody wants to hear the other you started with the introduction, right? That was
started
about 2 weeks ago.
Started with the intro, and then we did chapter one.
And that was last week. So
that
if
was
you
last week.
If you want to hear the back parts, go
you
to...
You go to MalcolmDigitalRadio.
.com.
.com. Don't forget the .com.
And go to 2 weeks ago, because all our shows are podcasts.
Everything is there.
That's the beauty of what we do.
I know, yes.
You can wake up if you have insomnia at 2 o'clock in the morning. Wake up and come to the website.
Yeah, so if you've missed chapters 1 and 2 or whatever,
right.
Go back. It's there forever.
You could do it on the weekends. You could do it in the weekdays.
You go to the bathroom,
right.
Whenever you want.
Don't be bored.
Never. They could never be bored.
Okay, where are we picking it up now?
We're picking it up at chapter 2. So again, let me say, do this intro, which I do every time. The trees, let me say, the book is not about trees per se. It is symbol. It's symbolistic. And call it a euphemism, if you like. And all I can say again about trees, if we never had trees on this planet, the human race would never have gotten to where it is. It wouldn't even have gotten out of its infancy, because trees gave us shelter, fuel for burning fires, because we didn't have gas or oil, you know, a couple hundred thousand years ago, as well as food.
Well, the most important thing is oxygen.
Yes.
It takes in our carbon dioxide. It's, yes. I remember in biology talking about elementary school, or actually junior mm-hmm. high school, takes in carbon dioxide and mm-hmm. gives
and
oxygen.
Gives off oxygen.
So it's
instead.
Opposite of what we do, because exactly. We inhale oxygen and give out carbon dioxide.
Yeah, we give out impurities. We ruin the ecology.
It's a symbiotic relationship.
Trees help to rejuvenate. We do just the opposite.
So Stan, let's get on with the story. We got a biological lesson.
Chapter two is called Ringo, and he is one of the, I guess you might say, one of the major players in the book.
Were this before Ringo Starr? Or how did you get the name Ringo? Was Ringo Starr inspiration? Or was
no.
It Johnny
just,
Ringo, the...
It just happened to fit.
Oh, okay.
And just...
Sorry for the interruption. Yeah. Continue, please.
If you asked Ringo, he would tell you that Brownsville was never part of the Wild West, but it did have its share of horses. Across the street from PS 184 were the horse stables. Anyone who lived next to the stables always reeked of the smell of horse shit. The horses were used to pull the push carts and wagons of the various purveyors of food products, articles of clothing, or anything that could be put up for sale or bought. On the morning of the first day of August, Mendel Nussbaum, the junk man, was tending to Mordecai, his trusted horse for the past 15 years. From out of nowhere, something spooked Mordecai, causing him to rear up on his hind legs, almost knocking over Mendel, and charge out of his stable. With bulging eyes, he clip-clopped as fast as he could on the asphalt of Watkins Street down to Riverdale Avenue and turned in the direction of Abey's Candy Store. But poor old Mordecai could not successfully negotiate the turn and collided with a parked car. He neighed as he fell to the ground, in the process snapping his front right leg below the knee. He tried to stand up, but could not. You could see the fear in his eyes as he repeatedly tried to get up, but could not. Then he lay on his side, motionless, except for his heaving chest. It took only 2 minutes for Mendel Nussbaum to get to his old friend, but to Mordecai it must have seemed like an eternity. Mendel cried as he knelt down and tried to comfort Mordecai. He knew what had to be done. Someone in AB's candy store had dialed the 73rd precinct, and a patrol car was on its way. Within minutes, an all-too-familiar green-and-white coupe of the NYPD pulled alongside of the soon-to-be corpse of Mordecai. One of the officers got out, put on his cap, spoke briefly to Mendel, and then removed his service revolver from its holster. It took only one shot to the side of Mordecai's head to ease his suffering. Later in the day, a truck from the New York City Sanitation Department was dispatched to cart away the remains of Mordecai.
Long live Mordecai.
So that was kind of like it was back in those days.
I remember, in the old days, I remember there was the junk man. I mean, I must have been the kid. I remember him coming around with his bells.
Yeah, we had junk men back in those days. People don't today. What's a junk man? Those were guys that went around. No ladies doing it, as I recall, but guys would have like a push cart. What's a push cart? A big wagon that you push. It was on two great big wheels. The wheels were like wagon wheels, and you lifted it up at one end, and you pushed it, and whatever you could carry in it.
A push cart, yeah.
Yeah, a push cart. And you had to be licensed by the city of New York to do that, like a car was. So you had to have your license on there, license plate. And that's how they made their living, selling, buying, whatever.
Small world story.
Well, don't you want me to get
it? No, that's
we'll come back.
No, you came to a good portion of that because they just wheeled away Mordechai.
They took away his
long live Mordechai.
Yes, go ahead. You were interrupting. Go ahead.
Small world story about push carts in the old days in Brooklyn. By the way, if anybody can relate to the stories of old time Brooklyn in the streets, let us know.
Call us in. Send us an email.
Yeah, contact us at malcolmdigitalradio.com or The View from Over Here, and contact us. Let us know about what you remember of old time Brooklyn or New York in general. But anyway, small world story. I'm living out in California. This is in the mid 80s. And I'm selling radio. It was KFAC. And I'm talking to another account executive, this girl. And I was talking to her about, growing up in Coney Island. So she said, oh, her aunt was a teacher in Coney Island.
One of yours, probably.
One of my teachers at Mark Twain Junior High School. But to boot, there were two men. I remember two guys. We were talking about push carts who used to have these little push carts, and one of them, two elderly Jewish men, one used to sell hot knishes, potato kasha, hot knishes, used to roll in the street. And the other guy used to sell.
They were 2 cents back in those days.
No, I don't remember how much.
Now it's like $2.50.
Yeah, but the other guys were selling, another guy was selling what he called his Arbis.
Chickpeas.
I never knew that Arbis was chickpeas. I mean, until I got out here.
It's made into hummus.
But he used to sell it in a little.
If you're an Israeli.
Oh, yeah. He used to sell it in a little bag and do salt in it. And it turns out this guy was this girl's grandfather.
Oh, wow. That's really, okay, that's like incest almost.
Yeah. That.
All right, let's get back to the story.
Oh, you want to go back to the story? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Continue reading. You have about another 10 minutes.
The thermometer in Brooklyn registered only in the high 80s to low 90s. Nowhere what it was like in Arizona, where it went into the three digits. But in Brooklyn, with the sweltering humidity and only the mid-80s, it was just as bad as in Arizona with triple digits, where it was dry weather.
Dry heat.
Ringo sat on an empty milk crate. And spread out the paper before him. The major headlines of the day were, back then, and I researched this, so it's true, Adam Worker dies from rays. Brooklyn boy dies after fall. Pakistan applies for UN admission. Man dies after leaving doctor's office. TWA unlikely to merge. Palestine partition favored in UN, and India and Pakistan unite to end riots. But they were of no interest to Ringo. He preferred the sports section. So he started at the back of the paper and worked his way to the front. Then all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, "You're up," called out Pachis, squeezing the rubber Spalding into the well-oiled pocket of his Joe DiMaggio glove, the one that his Aunt Bessie gave him for his 13th birthday. The bat in Ringo's hands was a sawed-off broomstick that he clutched 2 inches from the bottom while his narrow eyes squinted down Watkins Street into the noonday sun. With peripheral vision, he took into account the asphalt gutter that was closed in on either side by 12 feet of cracked pavement and the ever-squalid tenements and three-story walk-ups that stretched on the right down to the horse stables and on the left down to the cyclone fence of the schoolyard of Public School 184. The game was stickball, and such were the boundaries within which he could hit the ball.
I remember it well.
Okay. Mongoose easily shagged the Spalding with his left hand and then bounced it on the ground three times with his right. He stared in the direction of home plate and decided to taunt the batter by shouting out with his booming voice, "Let's go. We don't have all day, you know." Charlie the Man, the only black kid on the makeshift team, was positioned at the equivalent of first base. Solly was on second, Scumbag was at third, and Moe was in the outfield, 2.5 sewers down from home plate. A quick aside, distances were measured back then not by feet but by sewers, if you can remember.
I remember.
Anyway, Mongoose hesitated like a real pitcher would on the mound. He sneered at the batter and then cast a glance at the imaginary runner on first. Did a double wind-up and let go with a knuckleball. The pink Spalding twisted and turned, but Ringo, who had the hot summer breeze, such as it was, at his back, was ready and waiting. He stepped into the pitch and gave a mighty swing. But instead of sending the Spalding flying maybe three sewers away, it made a fart-like noise before it split in two, each half rolling harmlessly away from home plate. Okay, can you imagine that? Anyway, "Fuck," yelled out Mongoose, who was up next. "That was our last Spalding. Did you have to hit it so fucking hard? I could have hit it a lot harder." "That was my ball," said Scumbag. With that brief but succinct exchange of words, the game would be postponed until such time that someone came up with a dime, or more accurately, was willing to part with one.
That's it?
Well, that's it for their...
Okay.
Game of stickball, but the chapter still continues.
Okay, well, let's leave it there till next week.
You want to leave it there?
Right, you mark it till next week.
Okay.
Now, question for you. On the finer points of stickball, when we played stickball on the street, we never had a pitcher. What we did is...
We had a pitcher.
No,
sometimes.
We bounced the ball up. We hit it ourselves.
We didn't do that.
The only time we had a pitcher was when we played stickball in the schoolyard, and against one of the school walls, we put a box that was a strike zone, and then there was a pitcher, and then we played the same way, and the pitcher would throw against the wall.
Now, we didn't do that. We always had a pitcher, and we would play this in the street.
Oh yeah, no. Then we played in the street, but we didn't have a pitcher because we didn't have a guy as a catcher. Well, we also played the same boundaries was a thing called punch ball. I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
that.
Oh yeah, we played.
It was the same rounded ball, the Spalding, which was traditional.
We played stick ball and punch ball, the same parameters of the court, whatever you want to call it, and same boundaries.
Either a car or a crack on the sidewalk was
similar
first.
Rules.
The sewer was second,
punch
and
ball.
Another crack.
Oh yeah.
Well, one thing
if you could do a punch ball, if you could hit two sewers in a punch ball, which I was able to, two sewers on punch ball, that was not everybody could do that. Stick ball, you could do two to three sewers.
With punch ball, and the thing that I always I tell my kids or when I speak about the old days in New York, is every crack on the street, every wall was a game, a different game. If there was a stoop, we used to play off the stoop. There were two ways of playing off the
played
stoop.
Played stoop ball.
Stoop ball. You do it. You throw it yourself against the stoop. If it came back on the bounce, it was 5. If it hit a corner, it was 10. If it hit the very top, it was 500.
Yeah, there were so many variations.
Or we played what's called off the wall. We had the same thing with the wall. And someone would be in the gutter in the street, and there would be three people. and you would throw it off the wall trying to get it to bounce.
All right, now that you're talking about stuff like that, did you ever play Johnny on the Pony?
Johnny on the Pony, okay. Ringolevio,
what about
Beans.
Kick the Can?
Kick the Can.
King of the Mountain in the Winter?
I don't remember what King of the Mountain
was. Oh, you don't remember that? During the winter, if we get a huge snowstorm, the snow plows from the city would come and clear the street, and they would make a snow hill, which back then it looked like a mountain, but it couldn't have been more than maybe 6 feet tall. And whoever got up, well, we would choose sides. Somebody would be up on top, and everybody else would claw and reach and try to drag that person down and become king of the mountain.
King of the hill,
you were on top there, you could dump on them whatever you wanted, snow, ice, kick them, shove them, whatever, so that you remain king of the mountain.
Yeah, those were, in fact, there was a park like about half a mile from us. We never went to the park. We used to play in the streets.
Right, yeah. Park, yeah. We had a park about maybe two blocks away.
Yeah.
Two blocks away, and we never went.
We used to play a game called Grounders. In the gutter, there would be two people on one part of the gutter. The other person, the other team was about maybe 20, 30 yards away. And we used to throw the ball fast, and you had to catch it without fumbling.
By the way, for you people out there, when we played as kids, it was always in the gutter.
In the gutter.
Always.
Yeah, and
unless you went to the park, which two blocks was a big distance in those days.
It wasn't a big distance, but we didn't have to.
Yeah, right in the street.
Every crack on the street. We used to have like when the, on the sidewalk, you have the blocks, the cement blocks. We would play a game where you would bounce the ball. In one block,
I remember that.
Two blocks apart. One person would stand on one block. The other person would stand two blocks away. And you would hit underhand and it had a bounce in the other person's box. And then there was a way of cutting it. So the ball would bounce and bounce away.
Tell me, back in those days, did you ever turn on the fire hydrant? Because, what better way to keep cool than to turn on the fire hydrant?
Well, I live two blocks away from the beach, so the best way of
being
cool was go to the beach.
Okay, well, we didn't have a beach nearby, and the nearest pool was about a half to three quarters of a mile away. So we would open up the fire hydrant, and whenever a car would come by, especially a convertible, we would take the milk crate, put it under the shooting water and force it to go up, and the poor sap going through would get drenched.
Right, and now what would you do if you were the poor sap in the convertible driving?
Oh, come after them. They came after us lots of times.
Anyway, guys.
But we were fast runners. Oh, one time we did it to one of the NYPD cars, and boy.
And that was a mistake.
Yeah, well, we were scared shitless. And I didn't run. I said, let's keep calm. Don't let the other guys run. So one of the officers came up to me. He says, did you just? No, I just got here. And I don't even know how to open a fire hydrant. But in the meantime, in my shoe, hidden inside, was the wrench we used. But fortunately, he didn't look inside my shoe and saw that I had the incriminating evidence on me.
In today's police, they'd probably shoot you. Because you had a wrench that could kill them?
Yeah. Would they shoot
you were
me? Who the hell knows? I don't know. I would hope that they would. Oh, speaking of getting shot by a cop, there was something on the internet the other day.
The internet again, huh?
Well, yeah. So you don't know if it's true or what, but this guy down south, this cop, shot somebody because he did. The guy who was serving a summons to, not a summons, but a, some kind of a summons, and he refused to take it. So the cop shot him.
Rightly so. Anyway, Stan, it's about time that we...
We're getting near to that point? Okay.
I'm looking at 54 minutes, and we usually check out at 55.
Oh, but again, if anybody is out there and remembers playing those games, you really have got to send us an email. Just pop us an email to... Go ahead, Malcolm. MalcolmDigitalRadio.com. Or send it to The View from over here. We'd like to know if any of you are out there.
All right, go to our website, and he gives us your contact numbers. Plus, maybe we would organize, I think they did that one time, New York alumni, street games.
The New York alumni used to do that.
Maybe we could do resurrect it.
Yeah, they did it at the Beverly Hills High School once a year.
Maybe we could do street games. Anyway, guys. We will have a show next week.
Yes, definitely next week. I'll be back from Vegas on time.
Yeah, if you still have all your money or your cars. Anyway, guys.
I'll save at least a car with enough gasoline money to make it back.
We'll speak to you next week. Bye.
Okay, have a good one.
That's a wrap, Aaron.